From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I forgot how much I love this book. I don't know why I said it like that, but I love this book so much. And I think it's because of Sirius.
Oh.
We always joke about emo Harry and how much we love emo Harry and the whole thing, like, and caps lock Harry. Totally agree. And I love the story behind Order of the Phoenix and how Voldemort does things to Harry, like kind of takes him out, all of this stuff. But it's, for me, Sirius that makes this book. And I think it's because of this chapter.
Okay.
I think it's because of this chapter. And obviously, I think we'll get into that when we're ready to talk about it. But as I was reading it and as I was thinking about it, doing the notes, and even right before we started, you know, hitting the record button on this podcast, I was like, you know, this book gets it, and I'm in on that. So yeah, I love this book, man. I love this book. I know it's not one of the most favorite books of the Harry fandom, but you're wrong. You're all wrong if you don't like this book the most.
I love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you like things that I don't necessarily like, and vice versa, mm-hmm. It's not that I don't like this book. I agree with you. I hate feeling the feels that we have because it makes me uncomfortable sometimes for them. So we're, of course, here in chapter 6, which is the noble and most ancient House of Black.
The noble and most ancient House of Black. Sorry.
Snape might refer to their work as cleaning, but in Harry's opinion, they were really waging war on the house, which was putting up a very good fight, aided and abetted by Creature. The house elf kept appearing wherever they were congregated, his muttering becoming more and more offensive as he attempted to remove anything he could from the rubbish sacks. Sirius went as far as to threaten him with clothes, but Creature fixed him with a watery stare and said, "Master must do as Master wishes." Before turning away and muttering very loudly, "But Master would not turn Creature away." "No, because Creature knows what they're up to. Oh, yes, he is plotting against the Dark Lord. Yes, with these mudbloods and traitors and scum."
Love it.
I just loved that passage because I'm like, that's the chapter. They're cleaning a lot. The house is giving them a run for their money. Creature's just being a little nasty and sneaking things off.
But there's so much more.
I know, but I just loved that bit. Okay. Because I'm just saying, like, yeah, I just love that one paragraph because I'm like, that's the chapter. You need a chapter recap?
That sums it all up.
That's it.
They're cleaning the house.
The house is fighting back, and Creature's just muttering stuff under his breath the entire time. And Sirius is just being crabby Sirius. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, of course, friends, we want to thank you so incredibly much for those of you who have joined in sharing a little Lumos for us by becoming a member at jointhenerdclan.com. Those are our patrons. You can join for as little as $2 a month. A lot of friends there are reaping the benefits of getting our early access to Queen Charlotte episodes, mm-hmm. and other fun things that we have going on.
Oh, like Succession, so, or knee-jerk reactions,
yes.
even though Succession is over.
And it's like an adult show, so some of our friends here may not watch it or may not feel like watching a sad show, just like myself, who is an adult who doesn't like it. But there are a lot of added benefits there. So if we bring you Lumos in your time of Knox, please feel free to head on over to jointhenerdclan.com. And if you are a member there, thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you more than Creature loves Mr. Black's trousers.
Oh, well, that's saying something. That's a high bar.
I mean, we're not going to snog you, but we love you. We love you that much.
Oh, man. All right.
All right. Let's get into the show. You're welcome.
This episode has taken a turn.
You're welcome, friends.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
guess what? This chapter takes place the same day as the previous chapters. In case you are like, wow, it really does. Yes, it just keeps on going. It starts there and just keeps on going because they're doing lots of cleaning and getting ready before Harry's hearing. Basically, the house is being nasty, friends. It's just throwing nasty. All the dark tricks, sticky portraits. The doorbell causes a chain of domino reaction that you do not want to have to listen to. And this goes on for the better part of a week. They're cleaning out the house, and Sirius teaches Harry a bunch of things in his family tree, and the kids are just trying to help Molly, who just keeps giving them sandwiches. I wonder what kind of sandwiches wizards eat. And that's it. Lots of snacks.
I feel like they're like a cucumber and cream cheese kind of
people. I mean, you think that that's what Harry Potter would eat?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah, he's British.
I feel like they eat all that weird stuff over there. I feel like you want roast beef. Then it's not weird to them. They think what we eat's weird, probably.
Well, that's fine. But no matter. I ain't British. I'm American.
So we hang out. We learn a lot about what's happened in the Black household.
Yes.
In the Black family and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, man. I love this chapter. And Mary, like you said, not for the reason that they're just cleaning the house and the house is fighting back and like and Mrs. Weasley is going around giving sandwiches and trying to make sure that the kids don't talk about the weapon, that they don't talk about anything that they've learned about. Like, she is trying to take control over the whole thing, which, by the way, before we get into the discussion that I want to talk about, Mary, I want to ask your opinion about Molly and how she is reacting with the kids and trying to keep it all under wraps and the whole deal. Would you have the same reaction as Molly Weasley?
Yep.
How come?
What do you mean, being protective?
Well, yeah, but like a little bit overly so.
Okay.
Wouldn't you say?
I don't know. Harry Potter was attempted to be murdered by Voldemort when he was 1 year old. That sucks. Oh, guess what? Harry Potter was attempted to be murdered by Voldemort when he was 11, and her son was caught in the crossfire. I don't know. Voldemort possessed her daughter when she was 11 for a year. Oh, let's not forget that Harry Potter dealt with the true traitor, Peter Pettigrew, who was her son's rat for, like, what, 11 years? A rat was really Peter Pettigrew living in her house for her entire lifetime of her child.
Not great, Bob.
Nope, nope, nope. Their teacher was a werewolf, which maybe they knew, probably not. That was kind of weird, but now he's their friend. Probably weird. And then last year, Voldemort came back, killed Cedric Diggory, who is pretty much like the Tom Brady of Hogwarts.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't you dare besmirch the good name of Tom Brady.
I just went there, okay? He's pretty much the Hufflepuff, but nicer and not controversial version of
Tom Brady. Tom Brady is no Hufflepuff.
Of Hogwarts. Killed him. Goodbye. Voldemort's back. And their teacher there wasn't really their teacher. So,
not great, Bob.
You know, I'm not loving this as Molly Weasley.
Uh-huh.
And her older kids are involved. She's not saying none of her kids are getting involved. Mm-hmm. She's saying that adults can do this. But you know what, kids? Your track record sucks. One kid got possessed. Ron keeps like tagging along and almost getting killed by chess pieces and other random things. I'm all set with this. Molly Weasley is a nervous wreck, and all she wants to do is just protect her kids and give them some sandwiches. So, you know, had she not had that track record, might be a different story.
Sure.
She sees Harry as her own. Kind of want to protect this guy. The less you know, the better. Because you know what? She knows these little ragamuffins, the moment they get off to Hogwarts, they get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
As McGonagall says, why is it always you three? Always. So she knows if I could just protect him for like 5 more days, okay? 1 month more, he has to get to the ministry hearing. And that's the other thing. She doesn't want him bippity-boppity-booing and getting any more trouble with the ministry.
Fair.
Okay, just calm down.
But isn't there something to be said, though?
Harry's already run away and got stuck on the night bus. she's responsible for these kids for 1 more month.
Yes. It's 1 more month of less trouble.
Yeah. I would be doing the same thing. I would be like, you know, Arthur, I don't care. I don't care if I'm a little strict. I don't even care. All of these children are my responsibility. You think Sirius is helping? I'm doing my different perspective right now. You think Sirius is helping? He freaking sucks. You want to know what he's doing?
Hold on.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter.
He is.
Well, you get to let it play.
And you are?
Okay, go ahead.
I'm Molly Weasley.
All right, Molly, what do you
got? I can't even wait. I don't even have a talk therapist. I tried to listen to Michael Phelps, but he's a muggle. Okay? I just need someone to talk to.
Michael Phelps?
Just need someone to talk to. Yeah, he has that better health thing or something. I don't even know. I don't even get to have that. All that I get is my little Gilderoy Lockhart. When I open my book on how to clean the house, at least he tells me I'm beautiful and I'm doing a good job and I'm worthy of self-care.
Free of charge.
Free of charge, okay? Because Sirius, who you think would be like the other adult, this is his house. Oh my God. He is revenge feeding Buckbeak. You want to know what he's feeding Buckbeak every day? Rats. Rats. R-A-T-S. Why? Oh, I don't know. Peter Pettigrew got a problem with him, so he's going out finding rats. He's setting rat traps and rat bait. You think that nobody's just getting the extra rats here? No, he's getting them because he wants to kill all the rats thinking maybe he'll get Peter. I am so sick of this. So I've got a giant Buckbeak pooping, eating rats. I can't even handle this. So we've got him. We've got poor Lupin. You know, it's his time of the month. I feel for him. Nobody else gets it. Your time of the month, we get it. We have little like cheetats. Arthur's got his hands full. And he's gotten into some Sudoku, some muggle thing that's Sudoku to like help him with his problems. So he's sitting with numbers doing muggle things. Three of my kids, they're adults. Percy's a mess. Fred and George, they don't think I know that they keep putting doxies in their pants. What the heck is wrong with these kids? Why do you want doxies in your pants? You want them to nip your bits? Stop it! They're idiots. Oh my God. I can't. Harry Potter has no mom and dad. I've taken that kid in under my wing. I'm trying everything I can not to get this kid killed on my watch. Kids are crazy. Why did they send Harry here? Why couldn't he just stay with his aunt and uncle in the little muggle house with the protections? Why haven't they told him yet? Give me one more kid. Why? I've got my twins putting doxies in their pants. You think I need Harry Potter on my list of responsibilities? Michael Phelps, help me!
All right, everybody, I'll see you next week.
No, I am totally on Molly Weasley's side right now.
Oh, man.
100%. She's trying to love on them through her food. She's trying to clean because that will help her with her anxiety.
Oh, my God.
This poor thing.
Mary, what? Nip your bits.
That's what I would have thought. She thinks they're crazy. What would you think?
That's our new shirt. That and Michael Phelps, I need help. Oh, man.
But I do actually have a real theory on that. Not only do I feel like everything I said is true, but we have something very important.
How can we recover from that, Marvin?
I'm going to tell you how.
You can't
the locket. This is all the locket's fault.
Oh,
lest we forget that when you are around a horcrux, what does it do? Makes you crazy.
Makes you cranky.
Crabby. Makes you terrible. All these people are just in this house with this locket.
Mm-hmm.
Nonstop. And then they all go and they try to open it. Some really heavy locket that nobody can open. You think that locket, while each person tried to open it, made them feel good? No, Michael Phelps. It did not.
Why don't you talk through that?
Yeah. Talk through a horcrux that we don't even know is a horcrux. So, you know, they just pass it around. How do you open this? I don't know. How do you open it? I don't know. Aloha Mora? Yeah, we already tried that. Hermione. So it's
good idea, Hermione.
And like, poor creature has been with this horcrux now for a decade.
Does it affect him?
I 100% think so.
Why do you think it affects
I think the
elves?
Horcrux I think affects everybody. Elves. I think it affects everyone. Let's give him a benefit of the doubt, and that's part of the reason he's so curmudgeon-y. He's been trying to open this locket since Regulus told him to open it and get rid of it. And he has been trying. Bless his sweet little crotchety heart. And I think when he meets Harry Potter, he's like, how did you defeat him? He really means that. How did you do it? Can I tell you a little secret? You see this? What if he like went and he's like, oh, Harry, let's see if you can figure out how to open this locket. And people thought he was being sarcastic, but really he was like, if anyone can do it, it's Harry.
It's Harry freaking Potter. That's who it is.
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
I'm just going to let you keep going, Mary. Just keep going.
You just asked me. You came at me like, shame on Molly.
Whoa, time out. I did not say that. Okay. I asked you a very simple question, which is, would you react the same? And 15 minutes later, I think the answer is yes.
The answer is 100% yes. In case anyone was wondering.
Nip you bits. Michael Phelps, I need your help. Oh, man.
So, yeah, I agree with Molly. I'm not saying like it was handled super well, but I'm just saying all these people have some Horcrux juice, and we just need to be forgiving of them all.
So, Mary, let me ask you a serious question about... about Molly's actions. And isn't there something to be said of the fact that the kids... they're going to be the way that they are, right? They're going to talk, and they're going to do stupid stuff. And they're going to refer to the weapon, right? They refer to it, you know, like, you know, as an actual weapon of violence, right? Like, and not considering the idea that perhaps that weapon is information, or that weapon is knowledge, or wisdom, or, you know, anything of that ilk. For Molly to be as controlling as she is, don't you think that it's a little hopeless?
It's worth trying, Blake. It is worth trying.
Okay, fair. All right, you got the book open. I can see that.
Yeah.
I feel like you're ready and raring to go.
No, I'm not. I'm just like reading up on it because, yeah, I feel bad for her. She's really stressed out, and the best she can do is try. Just like any of us parents, the best we can do is say, don't do dumb stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Don't do drugs. Don't drink. Don't be dumb. Please go to sleep on the night before your exam.
Right.
You know, don't hang out with the bad kids.
Don't eat plastic. That's a saying that we have here in House Larson. We were watching some documentary. What was it? It was about ducks or something.
Blake, it was about the plastics that is in our oceans and how it's ruining our ocean life, which I take very seriously, friends.
Yes, you do.
I take it very seriously. I care about our animal welfare. I care about the oceans deeply. And it was this whole thing about how like microplastics break down, and about these poor sea life that don't know any better and they eat it, and how much plastic is inside our sea life. And so they showed a picture of like an obvious piece of plastic and a fish eating it. And Blake went, well, then don't eat plastic. Like, that's the solution. Go tell all the fish, just don't eat plastic. And so it gave me a moment of humor and levity, because obviously you can't just tell fish not to eat plastic.
Unless you're Aquaman.
Yeah.
Where's Jason Momoa when we need him?
Oh, goodness. So brushing his hair.
Whenever we have something that someone does something stupid or says something stupid.
But we're not really faulting the fish. This is a human problem.
We say, like, don't eat plastic.
Yes. But our kids have no idea why we say it.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, like...
Mary was disgusted when I said that.
I was. It's okay, though. Now it's a thing. You know, obviously, they are going to talk about it. Part of me feels like, too, that she just wants them to go to bed. This is the first, like, when this is happening, when she first says, don't say anything, mm-hmm. Harry still just got there, and he needs some night-night.
Yes. Night-night's important.
Okay, and let's be real. There's a Horcrux in here people don't know about, so Molly probably knows everyone's tired and crabby, and one of the best things you can do when you're not doing well emotionally, what are you supposed to do, friends?
Sleep.
Sleep and eat. Mm-hmm. So what does Molly try to do? Tell the kids to sleep
and eat.
And she feeds them. So I think that she's doing the best she can. She took notes from Michael Phelps. You got to get some good sleep. Got to make sure you're eating healthy. And she's like, that's the best I can do. Got one more month. And she doesn't want them to have nightmares. I mean, it doesn't help because our Harry obviously has nightmares.
Harry has all the nightmares.
No, but he does in this one, too. He goes to sleep and he dreams about creepy things. Dreams about creepy stuff. Like in Hagrid and made up monsters and all this stuff. And he dreams about the hallway for the Ministry of Magic and Mysteries. But he doesn't, you know what I mean? He just doesn't know what he's doing. So sad.
Mary, we've asked this question a lot, and I have to ask it again, which is, I think we've kind of sussed out that the author knew what a Horcrux was mm-hmm. at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think we've kind of sussed out that she has at least circled around the idea that the locket is a Horcrux by this point, right? Because it's a very specific mention, and then for the locket to be what it is later on in the books, that's either some really great luck or really good planning, right? And I would like to think that the author has it under control, right? Because it's at this point in the books that I feel like the rest of the narrative, like the structure of the narrative and the important parts of the narrative are already in place, right? Because this book sends us down that path. Mm-hmm. Without this book, you can't, like, you cannot get to the conclusion that we got in book seven. You just can't do it, right? Like, you can have the first four books and, like, have that be its own enclosed story and have it make sense, but you cannot have seven without five, and without five. You just can't have it.
Correct.
So I'd like to think that the author has this planned. However, you brought up a great point, which is the locket is there. It is a Horcrux. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it is making everyone mad. Do you think at this point the author knows that Horcruxes do have that effect on people? Or do you think that was an affectation of book seven?
I would say she knew now.
Okay.
And just there's so much, in general, dark magic stuff in here. Who knows? Maybe even the blacks put some kind of weird curse on it.
Yeah, it's called generational abuse. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That is fair. I don't know. I think it's an interesting question, and it's something that we should think about as we move forward, right? Because, again, knowing what we know from book seven, that there is an effect of Horcruxes on people. Or is it localized to just the locket, right? Mm. Because, you know, we had the ring, right? The ring that Dumbledore had. Did that make anybody super mad? Did, like, the diadem was lost, so we aren't able to know that. The diary, that didn't make anybody mad necessarily or give them poor emotions. It just took over Ginny. But that didn't have the effect, right? Like, when Harry was writing in the diary in book two, he wasn't like, oh, screw all these people. Like, he wasn't upset, right?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and look through it. Okay, but I can appreciate,
you know what I mean? Yes. Like, so I'm just saying, like, is that a thing that's, is it localized to just the locket, or is that an affectation of book seven? Or did she just not know at this point?
I don't know, Blake.
It's an interesting question. It's something that we should keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's something that we should, you know, look towards. I don't know.
We've got all these doxies hanging out inside the House of Black, and interestingly
enough,
nipping bits, stuffing it in your pants. Mrs. Weasley uses Gilderoy Lockhart's book to help get rid of these pests. You need Doxyside.
Free of charge.
And it's so funny because, like, she obviously had all these books. You know, she was a big fan of Gilderoy Lockhart.
How could you not be?
And honestly,
the man's perfect.
And, like, his books are probably perfect because, remember, he stole these ideas from others. So,
yes.
You know, I've had a couple people say, like, why would she still use this book when he was a fraud? The stuff was still legit.
Yeah. Doesn't mean that it's not good anymore.
Now, if he was there to get rid of the doxies, would he have remembered all this? Would he have been able to do it? Probably not.
But he
stole these ideas from other people who actually knew what they were doing. So it is okay that she's still using this book.
She's referencing information, not the person.
Yes.
Although I'm sure that she still has a little bit of a soft spot for good old Gilderoy. Who wouldn't?
Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests. So what's interesting, of course, you know, these little things, they fly around, their teeth are poisonous, and they squirt them with Doxyside, and that paralyzes them. And then you get to throw them in a bucket when they're done. So what I don't understand is why can you use spells on, say, pixies to help get rid of them, but you need to use Doxyside on doxies.
Oh, interesting.
Part of me wonders if it's because of the underage wizardry situation that with all these underage wizards, you know, she wouldn't want them bibbidi-bobbidi-booing because Harry got in all this problem. And I'm kind of wondering, like, are these household pests something that have become immune to spells and you need to use a doxy side on it?
Oh.
That maybe there are things that spells don't always work on and something just like think about how annoying fleas are. How much we have evolved as a civilization. Mm-hmm. And yet we still have issues with fleas. And here in the Northeast, we still have massive issues with ticks.
Yep.
You know, people are still getting bit and getting Lyme disease and all this kind of stuff.
What good do ticks serve?
They don't.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what?
They're pests.
What do they
just
do?
Just like doxies. And that's why I'm saying, like, maybe when they're just little pests, they just keep coming back at you no matter how much magic you have.
Mm.
Because you'd think that there could be a spell that's, you know, Molly could go in there and say, bippity boppity bye bye doxies, mm-hmm. and they'd go away. But you can't. You have to use doxy side. And it made me think of fleas and ticks.
Interesting. Interesting.
Right? And you got to spray, or you got to wear the collars, you got to do medicine, and still they find their way in. They're like doxies. But also I wondered if there was a spell. If there was a spell and she didn't want the young wizards doing it, I feel like she would have given them the doxy side and she would have bibbidi boppity booed. Like, I feel like, is she doing this because this is non-wand weaving and it won't get them in trouble? Is she doing this because this is the long way of doing it and it takes more time?
Yeah.
But on the flip side, by the amount of terrible things in this house, I feel like there would have been more than enough things for them to do had she been able to bippity boppity boo them away. So I feel like doxies are the fleas and ticks and you can't use your wand on
them. Well, it kind of reminds me of what my dad used to do for me, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, I grew up on job sites and, you know, people, you know, building buildings and doing the whole thing. And I would want to help my dad and my dad would be over there doing the same stuff as the crew members. And I'm like, Dad, I want to do this. And Dad, I want to help you with that. And he'd be like, all right, yeah, great. He would take a 2x4 mm-hmm. and he'd give me a set of nails. Mm-hmm. Be like, listen, I need you to hammer these nails into this 2x4. That's what I need you to do. That's going to help me a lot. So he'd give me this big 2x4 and he'd give me like a set of like 20 nails. And he'd just say, okay, hammer away. And I'd hammer these stupid friggin' nails into this board.
For no reason.
I kind of get the, hey, go hammer these nails feeling from Molly.
But on the flip side, that's what I'm saying. Like, if this was the last thing to clean up and there wasn't a whole house of chaos, I would agree. This would be her way to stall them for a month.
Well, let's look at the opposite then, right?
I think that they're the equivalent of fleas and ticks.
What if they are the equivalent of fleas and ticks, right? Mm-hmm. However, the other stuff in the house is way worse.
Yeah.
And the kids either should not be involved with the cleaning of that mm-hmm. stuff or can't be involved because of X, Y, and Z reasons. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
So which do you think is more prevalent in that action?
I don't know what the question is.
Meaning, which do you think is a more prevalent reason? Like either it's just busy work and see you later, or there's just... That's what you can do.
I think it's what they can do.
Yeah, okay.
And it is a big problem. Like weeding.
Sure.
The more hands on deck, like these weeds are taking over. We need all hands on deck to take care of this problem and it's safe enough for the children.
But don't talk while you're doing it. Just be silent.
No, just don't talk
nails.
About the... just don't talk about the obvious issue.
Well, how could you not? Voldemort's back. Yeah. And they're talking about weapons.
You know, I don't want my kids talking about scary stuff.
That's true. Fair.
So all set with that. We get a moment of levity and we get Fred and George talking about their Skyving snack boxes, which once again, whenever anyone says, like, who would you marry? I would marry one of the twins. They're brilliant. They're bloody brilliant. And they are willing to take chances and vomit and have all these issues. And they're tying everything on themselves. They're smart enough to do a mail order service because their mom doesn't get the Daily Prophet because the Daily Prophet trashes Harry Potter. I just absolutely love it. And I love that Harry, you know, is checking in on them on how their business is going, because of course he gave them the money from the Triwizard Tournament. Mm-hmm. So I loved that little like callback and for him to have this extra interest. I love that he has different relationships with a lot of the Weasleys that are his own. You know, like Ron doesn't even know this. His best friend, he didn't tell his best friend, hey, I gave your brothers. Because you know Ron would be jealous. you couldn't give me 50?
I know,
you
what
gave
are we
them
doing?
1,000? And you left me with those gross dress robes? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to me that Harry is able to have these personal relationships and check in on them.
Yeah.
And just also going to show you, because this is the twins' last year at Hogwarts. After this, they leave. Yes. Just so that they can go on their own adventures and in their own business stuff. So I just think it's really neat that we get to see the beginning of the skiving snack boxes.
Right, yeah. There. I love the fact that Fred and George are willing to do what it takes, and it shows you how, like, you've gotten these snippets throughout the books, but this is one of those next level things. Like, you know, they, in order to get the money in book four, they took it upon themselves to try to break the little charm that Dumbledore had around the stupid, what's it called, Triwizard Cup, right?
Yeah.
And then they got aged up, right? And then they've done things, they've gambled, they've made little products and sold it to other members of the Hogwarts. They've done all these things to try to create their own life. And then they've done it together. And this is the next big step for them. And they're willing to do it to themselves in order to succeed, right? Mm-hmm. It's a huge thing. That says a lot about them. And it gives you actual texture to that, to those characters, that that shows you again that they're real people. And I'd love to know why, Mary, you think they are so intent on doing what they're doing.
Because I think they have an entrepreneurial spirit. I think that they've always been outside thinkers, and I'm happy that they have each other to cheer each other on, because they're always going against the grain. Mm-hmm. And yet they still have that drive to say, no, we're willing to take these chances. We're willing to try this out. We see value in this. Mm-hmm. And for all these years to say, like, we see value in a joke shop. We see value in these kind of puking candies. And they're right. And so you always, you know, all different entrepreneurs who come up with completely wild ideas have to go through that. I mean, heck, we went through that when we were like, we're going to start nerdy book and TV show podcasts. And,
right. You
know, our families all didn't know what the heck we were doing, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think especially when you do, when you have a partner, whether it's a sibling, a friend, a partner that you're with romantically, whoever it is, who you get to go through a journey like this with, who gets to cheer you on, whether they're doing it with you or at least they're able to be your sounding board and cheer you on, I think it really helps.
Yeah, and it shows that they find value in themselves, right? Like, that's a big deal too. I mean, we were joking about Michael Phelps and having good mental health, but I mean, it's true. Finding value in yourself along with, I mean, if you're married, right? Like, that's a big deal. But I mean, if you have a brotherly relationship or a sisterly relationship, and finding value in that relationship is really, really important, mm-hmm. especially when you come from a family of very menial means, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to deal with the likes of Charlie and Bill. And then you have Percy, who is on an entirely another level, doing his own thing.
Yeah.
And then you have the favorite, that being Ginny, obviously. And then you kind of like, you have Ron there, but he's friends with Harry freaking Potter. So like, how can you really compete with that?
I'm Harry freaking Potter!
They're finding value in themselves, and they're creating their own value despite what their mother is trying to stop them from doing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's just, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
I like that you can, again, you can read between the lines here for these characters and see actual texture.
Mm. There's a theory, mm-hmm. that Fred and George were up to mischief even more so with these doxies and doxy eggs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Cormac McLaggen tries out in the sixth year.
Yep.
For the Quidditch team, as we all know,
yep.
for the keeper position. And he's really good. And Harry ends up saying, like, hey, buddy, like, why didn't you try out last year in our fifth year when Ron gets it? And he says that he ate a bunch of doxy eggs on a bet and was too sick to play. And so some people think that it was Fred and George who did it, also knowing that it could like help out Ron in the end to get the keeper position. So,
and especially given their history with betting.
Yes.
You could easily make that jump. Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So it's not like written in the thing, but you can connect the dots starting here.
That's my father like... will hear about this. Okay. Marvin, I kind of want to talk about what I really love about this chapter. Unless you have anything else that is pertinent to anything else.
No.
Okay.
Just that Ginny's... awesome. We get mentions of like how you can't really judge things based upon size, mm-hmm. and how she's got crazy awesome hexes, and then how they're like listening to this box that makes them fall asleep, and she's the one that has the knowledge to make it stop. Just, I love that Ginny is becoming like really awesome and tough.
For me, you know, last night I was reading a study. I was reading and watching a study about the character Galadriel in Rings of Power. And she is one of the reasons why that a lot of critics thought that Rings of Power was kind of a flop in that first season. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the second season. By the way, if you like Rings of Power, go to maryandblake.com and listen to Rings of Power with Mary and Blake. But they brought up, in the study, there was a couple of characteristics that were brought up in Galadriel that I think are the reason why that character probably isn't the best character or the best written character. And many of you probably don't know who she is or what I'm talking about, but you will understand the basics. You will understand the framework. And that is, she didn't have a real struggle. Like, there was no motivation behind what she chose to do. She simply did things because that's what the story needed her to do. And at the same time, there was no... she didn't have a motivation, and she didn't have a struggle. She didn't fight against
anything. This is what the study says.
Yeah, this is what the study is saying. And... it makes sense, right? Because the idea of when you can relate to someone, it may not be like you. We can't relate to being a wizard, right? We just can't relate to it. Just like we can't relate to being an elf in The Lord of the Rings or Rings of Power, right? We don't have that all encompassing knowledge. We don't have that magical ability. We don't live for thousands of years. But the framework of every story that you can relate to is something simple and easy that you can see similarities, right? And that, in the end, for any drama or for any story, is relationships and how you deal with struggle and how... why you do certain things that you do, right? I bring this all up because what we're given for Sirius, in my estimation, addresses both of these concerns very specifically. And that's why I think Sirius is probably one of the most generally... and widely held and widely loved characters in all of Harry Potter.
Elaborate.
Let's look at the motivation and let's look at the struggle that Sirius has, right? The motivation behind what he does is more than just, oh, James was my best friend and I hate my family. It's like this is his version of his own family, and he struggles with himself and the idea that he did wrong or he let James down, and he has to make up for that. And he also struggles with the idea that he's a little stunted by going into Azkaban for all that long. Mm-hmm. And he has to find something to hold on to in his life. I mean, he's stuck in this house. They will not let him leave. And this house is the harbinger of all that is bad, right, in his life. Mm-hmm. And he's burned off of a wall along with Tonks's mother, right? That is a huge struggle to live and to fight against. And the motivation that he has to make things right and to take care of Harry, but also to kind of live his own life now and understand where he's going and take back his authority and take back his agency, right? He wants all of those things, and he's not allowed to have it. It's tremendous, and it's all laid out by this chapter. It's all laid out by this chapter, right? Imagine having your mother burn your portrait off of her wall, right? First of all, let's just talk about the dynamic there, right? Clearly, the mother is a mess,
yes,
right? And the fact that he has to go live with the Potters to begin with is also a mess. And then imagine thinking, oh my God, my whole family was a bunch of Slytherins, and here I am being a Gryffindor. Imagine how excited he must be when he is made a Gryffindor, or he becomes a Gryffindor. But then the dread of knowing that he has to go home and tell his family, and his mother especially.
He's really pumped to tell them.
Yeah, but imagine that, though, like also knowing at the same time you're going to have to deal with this lady. There is something there, I think, that a kid that is 11 years old wouldn't want to do. Right? Like, how fascinating. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love this chapter. Because right off the jump, in chapter 6, we get a clarification on struggle and motivation, and it helps put into perspective why he has done what he has done throughout all of the time that we've known him so far. Like, think of what we've known of Sirius up until this point. He was a friend of James. He is Harry's godfather, and he can turn into a dog.
And he was in jail.
That's about it. And okay. It's not to say that he was a flat
character. He was cool. He had a motorcycle.
Yeah, but like, whatever. Yeah, like, he's got a motorcycle. Okay. Like, what does that say? It doesn't say anything about you. Right? Like, but now we get that. And I think this is the reason why the book works. Because later on, when, you know, obviously this is a spoiler podcast. So, okay, that is what it is. Later on, when Sirius dies, we feel that. We feel that because we can relate to that. And not only can we relate to Sirius and that struggle and his motivation, mm-hmm. but we can relate to Harry and what Harry wants and how those two things play off of each other. It is a brilliantly written relationship by the author. I don't think you can do better. Right?
I'm a fan of these books, man, so...
No, I know, but like, just as a character... It really works. And and I bet you can trace back all of the love for Sirius back to this chapter.
Okay.
I bet. Like, I would put the house.
And part of me thinks, too, if, like, people like yourself who've had outs with their family, I mean, heck, like, let's just be real. There are no pictures of you in some of your family households. You know, like, you have pretty much been burned out of family tapestries. So have I. Through your family.
Yeah,
so it's just, you know, I think because you can relate to it so tightly, and I feel like other people who may feel those struggles where they feel like they are massive outsiders with their family, they must relate hardcore to Sirius. He's not one of my favorite characters, and even though I'm different than a lot of members in my family, he's not someone that I relate to in that way. Mm-hmm. So for you to relate to him and to say that this chapter is monumental in that, because this is where we get to hear him and see him and understand these layers of him. I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time that actually Sirius exists in a very sharpened perspective.
I guess, like, for me, it's tough because we see Sirius treat Creature so terribly. Excuse me. And also, you know, obviously Sirius is depressed. He's gone from one prison to another. He's, like, locked up now in Grimald Place. He doesn't get to do the things that he wants to do. But there's a lot of icky feelings in this book. A lot of people are dealing with depression and difficulties and having to keep secrets, and that is difficult. So for someone like me, who I do like the wee Hogwarts, yeah. I love magic. So it's just hard a bit for me. I don't fall in love with Sirius in this chapter. I'm not like, wow, I totally get him, and I'm like, he's my man, because I do see him continue this treatment of Creature, whose Creature's terrible, right? Like, he's muttering terrible things under his breath the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, I appreciate everything that you're saying, because he's getting his reasons, he's getting his whys. It's allowing us as the readers to connect with, at least, and understand the troubles that he's going through.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that this is when everybody falls in love with Sirius. I'm saying that this chapter, I think, is the genesis of why we're able to love Sirius.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's why we can see, why we can get a pathway, and why, I would say that, and maybe you disagree, and I would love to know if you do disagree, that Sirius is probably widely held as one of the most loved characters in Harry Potter. Is that fair to say?
Part of me wonders if that's because of the movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Because he's so good.
He is so good in the movies.
His little wings and, like, oh.
Gary Oldman is just the best.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you not care, right? I agree about Sirius because of the films. And maybe that part of that is colored by the film. Maybe. But I still think that this is the frame, again, I keep using that word framework, but I think that this is what it's built upon.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
We're also getting a lot of things for Creature in this chapter.
Right.
And it's really important to remember that Creature has lived in this house with these crazy portraits giving him orders, mm-hmm. that he was happily working with this family. So Dobby, on the other sense, like, did not enjoy working for the Malfoys. So I don't know if Creature was treated with more respect or if he just enjoyed being with the Blacks better. Part of me feels like he was given a bit more respect just by how he and Regulus's relationship was. So maybe even if it was just Regulus who treated him better, maybe Regulus treated him like a well-beloved dog.
Yeah.
That I feel like Creature had some kind of care and compassion that he got somehow related to members of the Black family tree. And so that is why he continues to do what he thinks they would have wanted. It's important for us to know, so of course this is a spoilerific podcast. Creature goes with Voldemort. Voldemort takes Creature with the Horcrux locket and hides it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Creature goes home and tells Regulus, who of course was a Death Eater at this time. And Regulus is like, oh my God, that's the way we got to stop it. So Regulus and Creature go and get the locket, and Regulus dies in that process,
mm-hmm.
because it's so terrible. And he tells Creature, you need to go home and you need to find a way to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Creature, as I said, has been with this terrible locket all this time, trying to find ways to destroy it. And I think it's sad how Sirius talks about his brother in this chapter, where he says, like, oh yeah, he was a Death Eater, but then he decided he didn't want to be one, and he was weak, and either Voldemort or one of Voldemort's people killed him, but whatever. And I think that that's sad, that, okay, yes, your family did bad things, and they were terrible people, and your brother was a Death Eater, but your brother changed, and your brother saw that he was bad, and tried to unbecome one.
Sure.
And you don't have more pity for him, or you don't have, like, I don't know, I just feel like he came to the light, you know, like Luke Skywalker. He was pumped when his dad, Darth Vader, like, finally came over to the light for that 2 minutes.
Right.
And why do you speak about your brother who came to the light. Now, obviously, Sirius doesn't know that Regulus went as far as to, like, get this Horcrux.
Right.
But you knew that he died because he ended up seeing the wrong of his ways.
Yeah, and this is, I think this is one of the things that makes Sirius a really well-textured character, right? Because it's a flaw.
Yes.
Right? And that's awesome. Your character cannot be perfect at all times.
But I think that this is part of the reasons why he's not in my top people. I appreciate Sirius, but I think that he is an emotionally stunted grown man who has a lot of issues, bless his sweet heart, understandably. Mm-hmm. But he's not one of my favorites.
Interesting.
And I don't think he was put in environments where he could grow. You know, had he not been in jail all this time and had he not been now prisoned in this house where he has to relive, because, you know, like when you're with people who hurt you for so long, you know, let's talk, you know, obviously his family mistreated him when he would come home until he
left
and went to the Potter's house.
And let's think of that too, by the way, when you're that young and you decide, okay, I'm leaving, I can no longer be here.
Yeah.
Like that takes a lot.
Decision. Yeah. And so, you know, I know him now being back physically in that house where he had probably verbal abuse from his family.
Sure.
Putting him down left and right, it doesn't make him want to speak well of his brother. But on the flip side, as I said, it makes me sad because he hasn't been able to have time and space and the ability to have that kind of growth. To be like, wow, my brother grew up in the same household as me. Mm-hmm. Just like Draco Malfoy. I mean, we see it about Draco that, like, when you grow up in these houses, you know, it's sometimes hard for kids to choose the opposite direction. I mean, you couldn't just see him like how you could see Draco, Regulus.
Sure.
You know, grew up this way, thought it was the right thing to do, ends up seeing, wow, this is bad. I need to change my direction.
Yep. I mean, let's just take that into account, Mary. I mean, the fact of the matter is that he kind of did grow up in a Draco Malfoy household.
Yeah.
It's the noble and ancient House of Black. Like that is the title of this chapter for a reason, right? Like, because, and it makes you wonder, right, if Creature bought into the whole of wizard superiority and, like, you know, specifically the way that he talks about Hermione and Mudbloods and the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, does Creature speak that way because he's ordered to, or does he actually believe it? And if that's the case, is he okay with being subservient the way, like, just because he's an elf, like, he is inherently less than? Does he believe that, or is he just going along to get along?
No idea. I just think his poor little brain is mush by now.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, right? And the fact that Sirius has to live with that and deal with this guy and deal with Creature the way that he is, and have that as a reminder of all of the things that has kind of gone wrong in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a major struggle.
Mm.
You know, that is a journey. And I just think that's a really well characterized journey for Sirius. Like, I'm buying in.
I know you are.
I bought in.
Good.
Maybe because I'm emo too in my heart. Like, my, you know, I wish the sun
your
was as black as my heart.
So deep that I was trying to talk about Creature and you're talking about your love of Sirius.
Fair.
You're like,
fair.
How can I pivot this to my one true love?
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. I love you.
Yeah, that's true. It's so true.
You know, of course, they talk about how they can't let Creature go because he knows way too much. I just find it really interesting that, as I said, if you look through at the eyes when Creature meets Harry Potter and knowing that they all try to open the locket, it just makes me think, like, what was going through his mind? Like, maybe this is the hope. Maybe this is the person that can finally do the thing that I've been trying to do all these years. And, you know, watching them all open it, was he, like, hiding behind the tapestry to see, like, can they do it? Can Harry do it? Can any of them do it? Like, this was the thing I was charged with all this time.
Yeah, and given his love of Regulus, you would think that, like, this is very serious.
I do feel uncomfortable that he was snogging Mr. Black's pants.
Yeah, that's
why did the author use that word?
I don't no.
Like, why couldn't you just be like cuddling?
And I kind of want to just whistle past that graveyard.
A shirt or a handkerchief. But snogging in this sense means making out.
Yeah.
Gross.
I just, yeah. You know.
Maybe he made it into like a doll or something. I don't even know.
We're just going to.
And I love how he doesn't know that he's speaking all this time. It is just so brilliant.
It's just him murmuring.
Beautiful, because if we just heard what he spoke, we would have no idea the depth of his craziness. You know
what
I mean?
Right.
So I love that he does this muttering. I think it's a really interesting aspect compared to, because we've had some elves. We've had Dobby.
Sure.
You know.
Oh, we had, what's her name? Winky.
Yep, we had Winky. So it's just these different layers of them. And here is one that does like what he does. Toujours Pur is noble house, noble and most ancient house of blacks, which is, I think, like.
It's on the family tapestry.
Yeah, it's on their tapestry.
Yeah. It means always pure.
Yeah. So that's, good for you. Good for you. And we go through all the Sirius's family tree, finding out that everybody here's a pure wizard is somehow related. Very, very small world. Harry is interested and kind of shocked by all this.
Which also, that gives you some cool world building too, right? Mm-hmm. All these pure families, they're all attached at the hip somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it is the Weasleys somehow related, you know, to the blacks, or if it's Tonks's mother is related to the blacks. Like, it shows you that the world is small for them. And I love the fact that there's a what happens to Sirius in this small world and what happens to Tonks's mother is such a great dichotomy, right? Because the mother burns Sirius off of the tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the irony is that he inherits the house, right?
Like, yeah.
And just because she burns him off, that doesn't mean he's gone, right? Like, you, as a parent, you just choose to forget about your kid. Like, it's crazy. Yet at the same time, Sirius doesn't have to admit to himself or to the world that just because, you know, his mother's blood is running through his veins, that they're okay with each other and that they can exist in the same world. You know, like, he doesn't have to be what his mother wanted him to be. And the same thing goes for Tonks's mother too. Like, for her to get burned off because her mother decided, oh, I'm going to go marry the person that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it that too, in and of itself, shows that love is far more important than family bond. It's far more important than blood. I love that. I love this chapter. Like, oh my God, I love this chapter.
We get all of the screaming going on from the portrait. I love the fact that the house is fighting back in different ways. Mm-hmm. Just all the different curses, and goes to show you also the just the intelligence that Sirius's dad had when he was putting on all these enchantments, that these like top level wizards who come and stay here for the Order of the Phoenix, they can't get rid of them very easily. So it's just an interesting bit. Dumbledore comes in the middle of the night. Oh, we get Bellatrix Lestrange, and Harry remembers a little bit about her.
Yep.
But we get that Dumbledore stopped by, didn't see Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's miffed about that.
Who could blame him?
Right? And then we get the little mention of, okay, tomorrow, by the way, is your day that you're going to the Ministry of Magic for your hearing.
Right. One question for you, Mary, but before I forget to ask, why do you think they kept Sirius in that house? Like, why do you think Dumbledore is so adamant that he stay there?
I'm Sirius is a wanted man still.
Yeah,
so
but I feel like
if he gets found, it's automatic Dementor's kiss. Thank you very much. I think that Sirius flies off the handle. And, you know, had he not already been in this house under the watchful eye of all the Order, when he heard of the Dementor thing, he probably would have gone as Fluffy and gone to go see Harry, even though he was told not to. I just think Sirius is too brash to not be able to be trusted to, like, go out. And they just don't want that. They don't want any excess a possible people finding out what's going on and finding 12 Grimald Place. They don't let Buckbeak out. They don't let the owls out because they're afraid that too many owls swooping around is going to cause interest. So I just don't think that it's safe for Sirius to travel. I just don't. And with the Dementors already running around and little whinging, like, who knows if there's Dementors just flying around Grimald Place.
Sure.
Looking for Sirius Black. So now that they know they can't even trust where the Dementors are, I would definitely keep Sirius locked down.
Fair. Fair. And you said it yourself, Mary, right then and there. He's too brash.
Yeah.
And he's too intense. Let's put it that way.
He didn't get to have a proper adult grow-up period. You know, he was thrown in jail right away. And you see this sometimes with people who get adulthood thrust upon them early, whether it's through marriage or having a child or a death in their family, and they have to step up and take an adult role way too young. Sometimes they have to mature up so quickly, or they miss that bit that they act out later on in life.
Sure.
And so Sirius didn't get that.
Yep. All right. I like it. You know that? Good characterization.
Oh, there you go.
Good characterization. There you go. And that is the key.
Why did Sirius not, when Harry said, hey, can I stay with you if I'm expelled? Why did Sirius not say yes?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Because Sirius was the one to jump and be like, hey, why don't you come stay with me back in book three? Maybe he just knows more now. Mm-hmm. Right, like maybe he has more information from Dumbledore concerning the charm that Dumbledore put on the Dursley house.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Maybe.
But they still just won't tell Harry.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that maybe he's struggling with too. Here's a struggle that he could really be facing. Maybe he really wants to live with Harry. Right? Maybe he really does know that Harry being with him not only serves Harry the best, but himself the best, right? In both of those ways.
Mm-hmm.
But he's stuck to that house. And he cannot let Harry succumb or be subjected to the same treatments that he was.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's a, like, talk about struggle, right? And just a basic need for family, yet you're not able to have it. Who can't relate to that? Like, who can't relate to having something or not having something that you truly need, right? Or it's not just that you want, but you need to survive, right? That's a great struggle.
I agree.
So
that's why you think.
Yeah, that's why I think.
Awesome.
Interesting stuff.
It is.
Good. Characterization. All right, Mavi, you got anything else that you'd like to talk about in this chapter?
No, that's it.
All right, we got some emails. Here we go.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, this one comes from Charlotte. She says, on the day that I'm writing this email is the day after my 12th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Charlotte.
Belated, but happy birthday.
Not only am I a Harry Potter fan, but I'm also a big Hamilton nerd.
Ooh.
And I cannot get enough of Marvel, especially Loki. I'm a proud Gryffindor, but I tend to come off to my classmates as a Slytherin. You know what that means?
What?
It's okay. You're a Slytherdor, or you're a Gryfferin.
You're a Gryfferin like Harry.
Yeah, that's okay, cool. But I don't have to deal with that for the next 3 months because I also just graduated from sixth grade.
Yay!
Congratulations. Anyway, enough about me. I have a question for you. Do you think that Lily Potter was popular when she was at Hogwarts? And what kind of friends did she have? What houses were they in? I'd love to know your thoughts. Thank you for all the Lumos that you send. Charlotte.
I think Lily was very popular when she was at Hogwarts, and I think she had friends in all of the houses.
Yep.
We know that she was a star student in potions, which to me feels like she had a lot of Ravenclaw friends because obviously there are a lot of star students. That being said, in potions, you're going to need a lot of ingredients. So I feel like she would get the hookup with the Hufflepuffs in Herbology. You know, and she'd be like, hey, we should try this new thing. Awesome.
I tend to think that because she was so good at potions, that Slughorn favored her, and that probably pissed off a lot of Slytherins.
Okay.
I think I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I can see that. But I also feel like she might have lunch and snack and hang out with Sirius. So the Slytherins might have been like, okay, she's cool with us.
Oh, I would kind of think that maybe the Slytherins.
Not Sirius, Snape.
Snape, yes.
That's what I mean. Sorry, that she would hang out with Snape. She might have a little snack time. You know, they'd share notes or whatever, that the Slytherins might be like, whatever, she's cool.
Snape feels to me like a character that even though he is a Slytherin, even the Slytherins kind of made fun of him.
Okay, all right. I can go on that route.
By the way, Charlotte, this is an important thing I want to tell you. Being popular, not important. Don't worry about being popular.
Oh my gosh, totally don't.
Don't worry about being popular. It's not important. I know it may feel like the greatest thing that you can be right now.
Instead, be kind.
Be kind.
To everyone.
Yes. Yes. Do the right thing. Just, and if somebody is being unkind, help the person that they're being unkind to.
And if someone is a jerk, what we tell our kids is treat them how Harry would treat Malfoy, which is he generally ignores them.
Yes.
Like, unless they're like harming you or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what we tell them, that kid who's just like trying to rile you up is just a Malfoy.
Yep.
So, yep. The biggest advice I can give you is to be kind. No matter if someone's popular, unpopular, anything like that, be kind.
Yep. Awesome. All right. This next one comes from Faye. She says, I'm super excited that you've reached the Goblet of Fire. I've been following along from the beginning. We'll continue to follow along. Well, slightly ahead rather than along. I'm starting Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix in Norwegian. I moved to Norway this month.
Ooh.
So I'm trying to learn the language. Fun fact, in Norwegian, Dobby is called Noldis. Cedric is Frederick. And Dumbledore is Hjulmundsner. 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 Sure, why not? Anyway, I'm sitting here rereading Chapter 2 of Order of the Phoenix, and I can't stop thinking about the different perspectives of your podcast. You guys in this part of the podcast have made me consider the perspective of other characters so much more than ever before, which, Faye, was the idea. It's so easy to just sit in Harry's mind and stay there, but stepping into someone else's point of view is really enriching. So thank you for that.
Yay.
And I also have to say, you should thank Mary for that, because she was the one who came up with the idea for the different perspective.
Because what I do all the time when I'm reading.
I know,
I like fight in my head. No, this is it. This is it.
Rereading this chapter too, I honestly agree with Uncle Vernon, Victor Dumbling in Norwegian. Knowing that we know about Voldemort and that he is after Harry, where I, Uncle Vernon, I would also want Harry out of the house and as far away from me and my family as possible. Wouldn't want to get caught in that particular crossfire. Mm-hmm. My question for you is, what would you do in this situation? And what would Dumbledore have to say to convince you otherwise? Mary, I ask you this question.
I mean, if I was Uncle Vernon,
what would you do? And what would Dumbledore have to say to convince you otherwise?
See, it's so hard because, like, I'd be like, I'm not putting this kid who I've, like, raised his entire life outside.
Yeah.
I would be more in contact with Dumbledore. Excuse me, you didn't give me a manual for this kid. You left me one note.
Yeah.
This sucks.
I need a little bit more instruction, please.
Yeah. Should I be concerned? I know you guys have owls, but do you have shields? Do you have force fields?
Why don't you whip up a nice little shell for me for
Blake
my house?
Blake would throw the child out.
Oh, guaranteed. Not my chair, not my problem. Sorry. Sorry, kid. I got my own stuff to worry about.
Why don't you go on vacation? Don't you have friends?
Yeah. I'm sure that you
Isn't
got
there
like
summer school.
Don't you got like some like camp that you can go to? Isn't there some like outdoor camp
where you can make wands out of sticks all day?
Yeah, you just sure you go be a wizard. That's great. why don't you wizard yourself up a new family?
Oh my god,
that's what I would say to the kid.
Yes,
and
he would.
What would Dumbledore have to say to me? He wouldn't have to say anything to me. All you would have to do is just show the Benjamins. How many Benjamins am I going to get out of this? For taking Harry.
No, Dumbledore would just
I need a stipend.
Dumbledore would just look at your wife Petunia.
That's true.
And say,
Petunia.
And she'd be like, never mind.
No, he would look at you and you'd be in the background. Yes, okay, we'll do it. Okay, no problem. I just need more instruction, please.
Dumbledore, can I just come for like one day? Is there like a family visit day to Hogwarts?
Oh my god. Oh my goodness, it's a person in need of help. Come into my arms. No, all you have to do is just show the green. That's all I would care about. I need a stipend. Actually, more of a stipend. I need more of a balloon payment. Let's put it that way. I don't want none of those galleons. No. That don't mean anything in my house. Sorry, I want real money. Oh, Mary's disgusted with me today. All right, here we go. You ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes, I am. All right,
let's do it.
Thank you all so incredibly much for tuning in. As Blake said earlier, we've got a bunch of other podcasts that if you haven't checked out, we do in addition to the Potterverse. We cover the Rings of Power series, House of Dragon. For those of you who have not yet watched the This Is Us series that was on NBC.
Oh, yes.
I got to tell you, I was thinking about this, Blake. Like, that was one of my favorite series that we covered.
Oh, yeah.
And
made a big difference in my life.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So, and if you are someone who watched it, but you didn't get to listen along to our podcast episodes, we put heart and soul into that podcast. So, you know, maybe it can be a summer watch for you, a summer rewatch.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, we have a lot of younger listeners on this podcast, right?
I mean, this may not be a great show for them, but...
No, I know, but I'm thinking, like, I would like to try to do something for the younger listeners as well.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe you little nerds can send in some email of what you would like Mary and I to talk about for you. I don't know, I think it'd be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe it'll be some project that we can do with our kids.
Yeah, sure, I'm in.
Right, everybody. Well, on that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.